Okay, so we're just started talking about the data set on prices per square foot of condos. Yeah. I assumed that the price would go, per square foot would go up, but it gets complicated because there are things to do with the view and all that sort of thing. And what I would love you to do, in addition to doing this as a project, you know, here you have all the questions of how you're going to do it, right? But I think the other thing is, unfortunately, because there's two models. One is what I call the simple interest model. They add $5 per square foot for every floor you go up. That would be a very simple thing to do in Excel. But they could also add 2% per floor. So that's a multiplicative model. You see what I mean? As opposed to an additive model. I don't know how fancy these real estate people are. My instinct is they think percent. In business, you think percent, not additive. I don't know. Now, will there be enough data here to figure out which model they're using? I doubt it, because we only have five floors. So if it's $5 per square foot or 2% per whatever, probably the lines won't be very different. We have the same thing in radiation and cancer. When things are going up linear exponentially and it's the very beginning of the curve, you don't see much of a difference. So the real way to do this would be to go to New York City, go to Trump Tower, somewhere like that, and get 50 floors. And now you could very quickly tell, is it going up straight line, or is it going up that? But with five in Montreal, it's not. But since then, there have been a lot of big condos built in Montreal. So I'm hoping somebody can get the equivalent today from Montreal or any other city where you have exactly the same brochure, or maybe you could even find the formula, right? How do they do it? I asked this man, wouldn't it be more up at the top, the penthouse kind of one? And he said he wouldn't spend the money in the penthouse. He'd think, you know, but you're not the one buying Trump Tower kind of thing, right? Some people, the higher up, the better. But I don't know if that's the model or whether people only like to be a certain distance up and whether higher is better, I don't know. But I'm sure the real estate people know the laws very well, and they also know the laws of supply and demand, and they know what people want and will tailor it accordingly. So anyway, that's for next week, individual. I'll send you this tonight in detail so you know what to do. Right? But I think it's a very easy one, but it brings in a good few models quite quickly. Right? One thing I'll warn you, it may be in the, I haven't looked at the questions, one thing I'll warn you is be careful about using equal variance and unequal variance models, because the dollars are going up pretty fast here. And I'm guessing that the variance will go up with the big ones have a bigger variance and the small ones will have smaller variance. So that's going to be irrelevant. So these dollars, watch them. Right? Anyhow, that's one. So that's the one to do individually. And then the other one we'll do now is I'll mix it up a bit, is this one here, and I was just starting to talk about it here. It's this one here. And here's what I'm going to do for this one. You were asking, you know, this looked complicated medically, but I'm saying this is what spina bifida is. It's a hole in the spine, and the child dies, or, you know, or the other one is anencephaly, where they're born with what? What's anencephaly? Do you no head at all, or an empty head, or water in the brain, or
it's not developed, the skull.
Yeah, part of the brain is not developed. Yeah. So these are two fairly serious, very serious, very very serious things. And then folic acid is. I was explaining what folic acid is. Well, you better explain. I'll put more in. What's folic acid? So it's a vitamin,
yeah.
Kind of a vitamin, and it's important so that in the formation that everything closes off correctly. Yeah, and you see here, yeah. So malformations is the issue, and this is one of the very first studies looking at why were these happening. So this is way back in 19, God knows what, 1960s, I would say. They figured out that some of the women who had these things had problems with, I guess, processing folic acid or something like that. So they had to get supplemented. So the next, once they figured out that this was implicated, what they did is they supplemented high-risk women. They gave them extra folic acid as fortification, like extra vitamins, before they become pregnant, or as soon as, it's probably too late almost. It happens very early, right? This is right at the beginning of pregnancy, so now I think women are told, take folic acid before you get pregnant, right? So, and there was a big issue then, because how are we going to give it to them? Because it's hard to give that to people, and sometimes they don't know they're going to get pregnant and so on. So, certain countries, Canada and the US in particular, put folic acid in flour. They fortified the flour. Just like we put vitamin D in milk, there's folic acid in your bread now. And there's folic acid in all the flour you buy. Europe hasn't agreed to it yet. There's a big debate in the EU. Britain doesn't want it. They never like anything over there. And, So then the beauty of it then is they could study it. So you then have a couple of studies. I'll have to get the links better for these as well. Folic. Yeah, so there's a couple of articles, two in particular, but this was the first one out, showing what happened when they put it in. So Canada and the US agreed to put it in, I think at the end of the 90s. Where is it? Yeah, they put it in here somewhere, and then... So we have, before it was put in the flour, there was a one-year grace period where you could sell all the old flour. And so that was complicated. And then once it was all the flour was gone, then everything had to be new flour then with folic acid. So how much difference did it make to birth defects? So that's one. And then the other one was in Canada. Right? What did I say? Yeah, you have another data set from these provinces in Canada. This data set was a little better because I think in the US they only had the babies who were born. In Canada, we had the babies who were born, and that should be lower, fewer of them, but also the babies who were terminated. So that would be a big amount. Right? If it should produce a lot less terminations for malformations. Right? So the Canada data has a bigger signal in it, but I think it's a shorter series. So the data, the evidence is pretty striking, but I'm asking you how to, and I have to look again at how I made the questions or whether I made questions or whether you have to think them up from scratch, but you're basically fitting a model, and what's complicated is that you can have what are the rates pre? What are the rates post? Presumably they'll be lower. But I want you to also put in the line so it joins and it goes down during the year of transition. Because if the rates were here and the rates were here, they should join like this. So you're basically having to fit a line that maybe the line is going up or going down, but the line suddenly starts doing this and then the line does that. See what I mean? It's a very simple thing to draw. You can draw it. Can you turn that into parameters? And you turn it into... We crack our head over it. You're going to be challenged a bit. You need to be in teams for that. And I might even have to go back and remember how to do it myself. It's a bit tricky, but it can be done. But you'll know your regression models after you fit a line that goes like that, that, and that. Today, of course, what people would do, and we didn't have the technology at the time, probably you should not make it a sharp change here, right? It's soft, and it's soft at this end as well. So I think today we would fit splines to it, right? But the exercise of fitting something where the big problem is having the three lines join, the three bits join. That was the hard part. You cannot get me something where it's like this, and like this, and like this. It has to be that, that, that. See what I mean? Yeah. So those are the two assignments for next week. I'll straighten it out before tonight and send you the email on it. Right? But I think it's a good exercise. It's small data. The answer's obvious. But it's how you code up the thing to get the parameters you want. So draw the lines first. Put numbers with them if you want. Just whatever. And then say, how do I get the regression to do that? That's what I was trying to do last week as well with the fluoridation and water and whatever. It's obvious what to do here. Now, how do you get the regression to do it? That means writing the equation first and then lining it up with what you have in the models. Okay, so that's agenda for next week. I think we're done with that. The other thing I was worrying about during the week is thinking about is how to get you guys to get the most out of this. And so I asked you to think about it. I have a few ideas, but I want to hear you first. How, you know, I don't want to be very directive. I want you guys to be comfortable doing it, but I think you all feel like you want to get the most out of it for the 3 or 4 hours you're going to put in outside the course. So what can you think of as the best way to do it? I also don't like the idea of 3 rows of people. Can you kind of make more of a circle here? It just is not friendly. This course doesn't go, this style, you know, just make it more that way, yeah. Because we're going to be talking, yeah. But had anybody any ideas of how to do it? The other thing while we're talking about it. No, it's your face this way. Yeah, kind of in a crescent. Yeah. That's good. The other thing is to do with food and drink. It's complicated. I wish we were upstairs because the kitchen would be nearby and we could boil the kettle and at least to those who want to get hot water for coffee or tea. I only have instant coffee and tea bags, but we can go at the break and get the kettle and bring down water. But I do have calories to hand around for anyone who wants them now or at the break. But I think this, for you guys are coming. What the hell is that? Oh, okay. Food. Okay. Anyway, talking of food. Yeah. But anyway, what about structure for the thing so we get the most out of it? Teams, I think, are essential. They're essential, so
I like the idea of having one individual and one group thing, so it's a bit more structured, because before...
So like a reporter?
One, not necessarily, just like the way that you're changing it from...
Yeah.
Before it was just like...
Anybody doing anything, yeah. No.
So it's sort of like a bit of structure. I think it would be helpful also if you like specified what the end product is, kind of... No, absolutely.
In fact, I have one person sent me an end product last night. Was it you?
Yeah.
For your team. Yeah, you five, you were a bunch of you, there were 5 of you. So let me show you what I got last night, and I think it's a very good, who was it?
No,
it's Raji. Okay, but I saw 5 names on it.
No.
Oh, the first one was 5 names, with you guys, that was these guys. They were ahead of you, I think. Yeah. Anyway, so that's good. Yeah, I haven't looked at my email yet this morning. When did you send it?
One
in the morning? I'm going to bed at 1 in the morning. So if you're going to send me something and then I can read it in the bus on the way in, send it before 10 o'clock. Because I turn off my computer at 10 and it doesn't sync anymore and so on. Right. But these guys sent something about 7 or 8 o'clock. Right? Yeah, and let me show you, because it was quite helpful, and you probably have done the same. And I think this could be the product. You know, in fact, as I realized it, I think by them sending their stuff ahead of time to me, I could have a look at it. I could look at all of them now and decide which things are we going to focus on. Because if 3 of you do the same thing, we need to only do 1. Yeah, so I think it's not a bad idea to have sent the work the night before. Whatever you've done. It doesn't have to be very final, but I need to kind of see. Yeah, so let me find it here. Dropbox, yeah. Yeah, so it was week 3, yeah. Women in math, etc. Yeah, so this is you guys, yeah. So I thought they did a very... In fact, it's really quite professional, these guys. They're obviously were using R Markdown. And this is something I'm going to have to figure out how you do, because they hide the code. I knew you could do that, but now you're going to have to... Did you send me the R Markdown itself?
No.
Okay, please send me that, because I want to cheat now and they see how to do it, because this is really good. Yeah. But anyway, that's, we'll go through this one. And sorry, guys, you were late for the other one. But yeah. So is that what you mean? So I think if everyone give us their summary, yeah, beforehand, it would help.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like we aren't going to be present, because then the...
Well, we can, I'll call, I can pick and choose now, and, you know, I think it's even better if I can pick and choose a bit.
Yeah.
Because I see now what's going on. There's a couple of things I saw here. Yeah. And, yeah. But you can still, you know, I'll call in these guys and say, what did you think, and so on first. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But if I had all of these ahead of me, then I'd have from the five teams or whatever it was. Yeah. Any other suggestions? But I think this would work well. It doesn't have to be complete, final, polished. This is very polished. But whatever. But the main thing I'm going to be looking for is the bottom line there. Where's the tweet? Right? The tweet is 140 characters. That really is the bottom line. Honestly. That's the most important bottom line. Right? Not all the models. Because in the end, you have to stand up and say this to somebody. Anyway, we'll see in a minute if we can make a tweet for this when we're done. Tweet is 140 characters, right? How many words is 140 characters?
Depends how long the words
are. I know. Donald Trump's usually four, yeah. And great and big and double and, you know, fantastic. Well, I don't know how to use this, but okay. Anyhow, any other suggestions? Yeah?
I feel like a lot of times in... my work as a grad student, I'll do like something like clustering and then not really have any like real foundation for like I don't know what good practices of those things are or not. So
okay.
Maybe if we could send you a list of things that we like to be incorporated, then you could maybe
comment on them,
tailor some of the data sets or a task to include some of them. Like if a lot of people were like, yeah, I need to use clustering, or like I need to do this kind of regression or whatever.
Yeah, I will do a bit of that. Yeah. I won't do a lot of didactic stuff because, right, but I know where you're going. Yeah. But dude, if you do clustering, I've never done it, so that's a bad example for me. I wouldn't know what to do. Yeah, but that's fine. But I don't want it to be technique-based. Honestly, I would rather, there is kind of in the ones I pick, there are a few obvious techniques. I guess I can look for ones after that would be an example, because then you could teach us and, you know, we could learn from that as well. But yeah. But doing things by technique bothers me, because I think we're doing the opposite here. Here's the data set, let's go find the technique. I think if we're doing technique this week, then everything is about that technique and you don't think of anything else. So that's a different way of teaching. It's the original, you know, when you learn stuff first, you do it by technique or by chapter. Yeah. But yeah, that's helpful. Yeah. Anything else? Anyway, that's a good start. Yeah. And then I will also try and give feedback on the pieces individually as well. And I think I'll show you something else I've done to start making summaries from each week. Because I'm a bit nonlinear and the course may be nonlinear during the 3 hours, I think the idea of summarizing the points is really important. So then we can agree on, you send me your summaries, those bullet points you've been sending me are great. I sometimes find things in them that are not quite right, which is even better, because then I can correct them when I do it. See what I mean? Because you pick, one or two things picked up something, and I said, was that a typo, or did I really misget this, something? And so it's really helpful to know whether we're... No, don't tell me this is acting weird again. It just blacked out to me. Okay, it's just... Yeah. So anyhow, that's... Yeah. So I will show you in a second what I did for last week before we get on to these. Anything else? I think that's enough. Yeah. So the other thing I did is I made myself a site where I can put stuff in a more organized way and you can find it once and everything is there. Course description, the exercises, and I'll keep updating that and just changing it. And the summaries now, I'll just quickly go over a few things from last week. So this was very helpful because these were your bullet points to me. Some of you wrote the take-home message. I want to keep that as much as I can because you say, putting this kind of variable in does help, doesn't help. That's much better than saying precision because it's telling you exactly what's going on. So I try to be declarative here in what I'm saying, yeah, and so on, yeah. But then last week, yeah, this is the definition. The beta is the difference. So here, where's an example where I took one and actually did it out fully, so you see it, right? Mathematically, putting this in is toggled on and off. Somebody had remembered that from the lecture, and so I kind of cleaned up the words and used that. This one is notes myself. These are my notes that I use for teaching regression. One lecture on confounding, another completely separate lecture on effect modification. And here's effect modification. And so you see many of my examples that I gave you guys to do are here. Right? You see? A characteristic of individuals which a parameter of a relation depends. That's a complicated way of saying it, but it's different slopes or different folks is my way of saying it. It is scale dependent, because you can sometimes have lines that go up like this, spreading out, that if you took logs, they would be parallel. So that's the idea there. But these are all the simple versions of it here, like crossing ones and ones that don't cross and so on. It's easier to think about if the modifier is just a 0, 1. Right? It's very complicated to draw if the modifier is continuous and the x variable is continuous as well. That's more complicated. But here, this is probably my best one. Right? Look at you have all four betas in the model there. You see them? That's the whole story. You have an intercept for one group. Where's the B0? Here, it's here. Right? Then, where's your B1? That's the slope of that line. Then B2 is how much you jump. Oh, that wrong? That should be B2, obviously, right? Oh, B2 is the difference here between the two intercepts. So that's a typo that I can't fix now because this was made 25 years ago with Word. But anyway, I can. I'll edit it in PDF. Yeah, but that should be B2, I think, right? Then what's B3? B3 is the extra slope. Because it's the same B1 you borrow from here, but you add the extra on it. So that, to me, is probably the kernel of the whole idea of that. Right? And then how you write it out in various ways. But that's just doing the math of this. And you can rearrange it in different ways. And I guess that's it. Yeah. We'll come back to this in a minute. So that's that one. Where is the other one I had? Where did this come from? Where was I? Should be back in... Oh, I should have gone back to the... Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. What else? These are okay. These are okay. Oh, I put in code to draw the three lines because I was actually a bit surprised that two different groups last week sent me three parallel lines. That's what I was complaining to Sammy about. How come they drew three parallel lines and they didn't line up with the three non-parallel lines? We were fitting three non-parallel lines. Huh? I can make it with four parameters, but you would really need six to do it fully, to make three completely separate parallel lines. Right? But I squished it down to four because I made them all go through the origin at the same place. So I could save two. It isn't quite the best fit, but it, you know, is the easiest to do. But the main thing is you made products of each one of them with the X. This is kind of, somebody asked me about stepwise regression and doing these kinds of things to decide what to put in a model. I can't stand stepwise regression. It's very agnostic to me. It's fine if you're working in Google data and you haven't a clue what the X's mean. Put stepwise regression in. But once you know what the X's are and some biology about it, it's hard. I guess I come from the area where we think of we want meanings for beta 1, beta 2, beta 3. If you're into prediction business, in the AI business, in the prediction business, I agree with you, stepwise or something for reducing models is more relevant there. Because all you want is the prediction to be good. Right? But if you're interested in causes, and how much this changing this causes a change in that, the betas, individual betas matter to me, and the rest are confounded. So I'm less in the prediction game myself. I've never been in it, but I can see if you were, you could be more agnostic, and stepwise regression makes more sense, or lasso, or something for paring down models. But it's a big culture change between the different groups for that sort of thing. And I know the machine learning people on that are all more into that. Yeah, but it's hard for me at this age to switch over to that kind of mentality. But anyway, because here in most of the ones I give you is fairly obvious what the role of the variable is, and that all the variables are there, that they matter. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I put this down last week, but here's the original, and it wasn't Mietnin who said love makes time pass and time makes love pass. Apparently it was the Greek guy Euripides that said it. But it's a very nice example of the complaint I have about, and it's the same as Mietnin's complaint, about why the word interaction is a poorly chosen word by statisticians and why effect modification is a better word. So I've put the links, and I've even learned now that you can put a link directly to a page of a PDF, which is really helpful, instead of you looking for where I'm going. Same business here, and so on, so on. A few more things here. A couple of articles that are good, that I like. What else? And that's it, I think. And then any tricks I got from coding. And actually, I put in about aggregate, and some people like to aggregate. Some people like t-apply. I see that and think, how we want to do something by, splitting a data set by. And just last night, looking up somewhere, I had seen the word by. I'll show you today in the analysis. By itself, in front of the statement, can split things as well. And it's even easier, more obvious. So we'll see an example of that today. So I'll be adding this to my list of codes. And if you find other tricks for doing things, I'll definitely put something for our markdown once you send me it. So, you know, once you have a template for how to do something nice, it's hard not to use it. I'm a big believer in a saying from somebody, I don't know who, good painters borrow ideas, or good sculptors, they borrow ideas. Great painters steal them. I steal them. When I see something good, I steal. You know what I mean? I copy it. Okay, anything else? That's it, I think. Yeah. Okay. All right, so we'll keep that going. So please send me as quickly as you can after the lecture before you forget. Make your points and send me them. Even if they're overlapping, I'll distill them and kind of triage them. Okay? Okay, so now we should come to today. And today was the women in math one, wasn't it? Oh, first, was it very easy for people to do what was it? Somebody sent me a graph. It's in there, I think. It's not that you're predicting something. Yeah, it's here. You have it. It's not that people are predicting ideal weight. Are you predicting their ideal weight? Or are you doing something else? I asked, you know, the formula was ideal weight is 100 plus 5 pounds or 110 plus 6. Is that... Is that a question of prediction? Do you think a lot of people think of regression as prediction. I think of regression sometimes as nothing more than summarization. It's just a quick rule of thumb. Predicting has the sense of the future in it. To some people. Predicting. Saying it before the thing happens. Right? A lot of times we're post-dictive. We're saying something, a pattern we've seen already, we just want to put it into words. So regression can also be for just summarizing what you've already seen, and that, you know, it can be used for future cases. But I'm not a big fan of regression for prediction. I'm interested in regression for description, and then regression for making things fairer and sharper. Those are my two main reasons. But now, definitely, there's other complete books, and when I've gone teaching regression, I find some books, I love them, but I couldn't use them because they were all about predicting. And that's different from what we do in medicine. We're trying to understand what happened and why is folic acid, you know, what is the problem? You know, how much riskier are the people who don't have folic acid metabolism, those who do. I don't think of that as predicting. I think it's learning about causes and so on, right? But that's just a culture thing. So go back again to where I was. Yeah, so everyone got that. So let's use your example. Where was it? Week 3, where were we? So is everyone okay with this? So I said put these two together, right? These two into one. Isn't that right? That was the job. Yeah. But I think you called it prediction somewhere. See? Predicted values of weight. Yeah. I think of it as it's a formula for ideal weight that summarizes recommended. It's recommended, isn't it? It's a formula for what's the recommended ideal weight, isn't it? That's what it is. And it happens to be a function of your height. There's another word that is a very useful word in all our business for a variable, like height, that's actually influencing what the ideal weight should be. And it's determinant. Determinant is a neutral word. It's not causal. Age determines your blood pressure. Height determines, right? Then you stay away from arguments about causality and everything like that. But it's a word that Mietnin brought to epidemiology. He brought a lot of good things to epidemiology. And he brought effect modification, and he brought the word determinant. A very, very useful word. So it's sometimes... Then you get out of the business of a causal one. Like some people talk about an explanatory variable. Some people talk about the independent variable. Determinant is very clear. It's like you have f of x. X then becomes the determinant of y. And that's it. Right? And it has a very neutral sense. Right? Compared to causing, increasing, decreasing, and all that sort of thing. Right? Because we're not talking about increasing or decreasing our height here. We can't. Right? As we increase height, the weight goes up. No! People who are taller have higher weights. That's about it. You're not going to change it. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I would say recommend. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's the ideal weight equation, a recommended ideal weight, as a function of height. Yeah. So people are good with this? Any reaction to these? And I'm looking here at W, and I'm saying, why is W in it here?
It's female.
Oh, okay, women and men. Women. Okay, yeah, okay. Oh, so that's how you put it, right? Okay. Yeah, so you wanted one to say there's men. Yeah, or it could be put over here as well, right? Yeah, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, the point is, it's the weight in men and the weight in women should be this and this. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, I got you. Yeah, okay. So now... That's what he ended up with. Did everyone get that? Right?
Mine was slightly different. I just used my x-axis as height above 5 feet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think he's effectively doing that too. Yeah. Yeah, if we're trying to write it shorter, we could say relocated height or, right. Yeah, a new origin for height. Yeah, rescaled or
re... Like
yeah, it just shortens the... It just tidies up the equation, but absolutely, yeah. Yeah. But did everyone else get the same? And did everyone start in the same order? Because you can start, this equation is going to have four numbers in it because it's two different lines, completely different, right? So you have a starting and ending line for the starting and a slope for the first one, and then the starting and the slope for the second one. Yeah. So you can go from here up to here, then start over here and go up again. And that's, I think, the order you're thinking of, right? You start here. So basically here you're finished with the women now when you stop here. Isn't that right?
Yep.
You finished with the women. Now, but if you want to keep that and then add something to it to make it relevant for the men, then you jump up by 10 here, yeah, and start again, right? But you can still use the one you had before. Where is it? There's a 6 missing here, is there? Oh, no, a 1. There's a 1 missing here. Isn't there?
Well, it would be 1.
Yeah, but there's definitely one missing here, isn't there?
Well, Well, like,
it is a one, but put it in. Put it in, Anthony. If it was, what if it was two, right? Yeah, put it in. Yeah, make sure, because this is coefficient and this is variate. Yeah, coefficient variate. Always put it in, even if it's a one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because otherwise people get confused. Yeah, so this is a product of a beta and an x. And so we need a beta and here. But here, this is a product, yeah. Exactly. So it's a one extra. The 5 was still there, and then we're turning on an extra 1. So that's what I mean by toggling it on and off, which I think some of you thought of last week. Yeah. And that's the same height that was over there. So you have the 1 times this and a 5 times that. That'll be 6 times this. And you're basically saying, in English, how would you say this? Plus an extra 1 if you're male. If. Well, if is just like that, isn't it? Because if you put 1, then it'll actually click in, and if it's 0, it'll stay out. Yeah. So so when I teach regression first, I always put it as if you're male. And then I say, well, there's an easy way mathematically to say that. Just put 1 and 0 to turn it on and off. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's it. Big one for shortening. Why do we need sex male m equals 1 and sex male equals... I'm saying call that male, M-A-L-E, and put it as a 0 or a 1. Don't even get into sex. You can say male, yes, male, no. If you're male, no, that means you're female. See what I mean? So you can make this. Mine would be... where am I? Mine would be, what is it, height equals 110, 100 plus 5, this thing is messy, okay, 5, right, plus 10 more, I don't know why this thing is acting weird, 10 more, if male, really acting weird, yeah. 10 more if male, right? Plus 1 times height, 1 times height, more if male, right? Isn't that it? Yeah? So I can make that height multiplied by male, right? That's the turning it on. Huh?
Weight.
Weight is 100 plus 5 times height plus 10 more pounds if male, so that's 10 times male, plus 1 times height. And when you say more, it means only if male, put male, so just put male. So it's, so it's 100. Oh, Lord. Plus 5 times height plus 10 times male plus 1 times height times male. So the product comes in naturally now, because the product is just turning things on and off, provided you have 0 and 1. But I don't think it's always taught like that in stats courses. It's taught as a product first. Oh, well, it's a mathematical product, x1 times x2. But I much prefer it. The other beauty here is that male is 0, 1, so it's a turning on and off. If you have a product of two continuous things, it's much harder to think about as well, right? So it's harder. But that's why this is the nicest example. So, yeah, so that's it. So that good? Yeah. So I would just call that recommended values of weight is a function of height. I'm, by the way, again, since now we're so good in graphics, not to take away from this, which is really nice, but this is just a personal thing. I hate having to look up legends. I hate having to look them up. What else could we do?
Them over the lines?
I would put them right on top. Yeah, you can put text wherever you want now in things. So I would put male here. Right? Right there on the thing. And female here. There's no... The days when, you know, printing was hard, you had to put legends in, you had to explain them in the bottom of the thing, those days are gone. So graphics now, I don't know, you know, the way I would take my cues on this would be if I look at The Economist. The Economist has one of the best sets of graphics used to have. I know it's probably, you know, they're all good now. But look at some of the ways the newspapers, The Economist and the others, the good magazines will do it. And they're very creative about getting stuff right to your brain quickly, with the least, right, having to look up and process. Heat maps, I know you have to put on the side, but something like that. And I would think The Economist might even have, not even male and female, they might even have a picture like you have in the bathroom, a male and female. See what I mean? Even faster. Things like that. So these are all possible now with graphics that are, so I'm constantly playing with them myself to try and see what goes to the brain fastest. Yeah, but it seems kind of a waste to have this. Yeah, this should be height in inches over 5 feet. Every inch over 5 feet would be a better way to put this. And this is weight in pounds, right? Weight in pounds. It's way too low, huh? This equation. Then does anybody fit? Does anybody stay below this line? Are you all above this line? No, I think so. I can't see anybody in this room who fits the ideal weight one. It's from Harvard, from the insurance companies in the 50s. It was very, very conservative. I think they've added a few extra pounds to the intercept and maybe a few pounds to the slope. I don't know anymore. Yeah. But I think it's a tough one to follow, unless you're in a ballerina or something like that, or whoever the equivalent is in men. Okay. So any more to say on that? Yeah. But honestly, it's my favorite example for teaching all of regression. If I'm trying to teach multiple regression, this is my example I use to everybody. We don't need data to teach multiple regression. What you need is equations. This is what Sahir was trying to do in the course last year. Teach with parameters. Don't get into clouds of data points. That only confuses things. Residuals and all that. The important thing is the lines first. That's the first thing you want to get out, the signal. There is a secondary thing to do with the variation off the line that might be interesting or might not be interesting. But you're only giving average relationships here, right? And so on. So yeah. So I think teaching regression, that's how I teach it. Right? I would teach it with only x1 that's a 0, 1 as well. But anyway. But okay, so that's that. Any more on that? And then we were going to go back to the math one now. So I'm curious what other people did. Can you tell me before these guys told me what they did? What did you guys do for the women in math one? Oh, let me get up the data set first, and so we it's clean. Yeah, let me do that first. So actually, here's the data. No, that's not the data set. The data set. Okay, so where are we? Recent women in math. Okay. So I tried to get into that PDF and I couldn't get the damn data out of it. Was it hard? Pain in the neck to get the data? Yes. It was, yeah. So it turns out I found another place on a website, I'm going to change it, where the data were nice clean columns. And I put it right inside of this so you have it. You just had the, which group that we're in, their pre-score, I guess, and their post-score. And so I just read it in this way, so I'll share this with you. Yeah. So this will do the same thing. You just read in all the numbers into one big number, and then you do every third one is the first column, second, fifth, whatever, is the second column, which is math 1 and math 2. Right? And I'm going to, so that's done. Then, you see, what am I doing here? I'm going to do it this way. right? Four indicator variables. And by the way, those are, in polite company, we don't talk about dummy variables. In better families, as Mietnen says, we don't talk about dummy variables. They put in the dummy, you take out the dummy, you do this, you do that. People listening to you find that very strange, right? Where did the word dummy variable come from in epidemiology and statistics? Where did it come from? People, honestly, some of the terminology we've inherited over the last 100 years is bizarre. A dummy variable. Where do you think it came from?
Statistics.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It actually came from research in psychology or something where they were doing, they were giving people fake things to do. Like, are you paying attention? So we'll ask you a fake question, see are you paying attention, right? Or you put a dummy variable, a dummy question into a questionnaire to see if there's any bias or not, right? That's where the word dummy, you look it up on the internet where it came from. And it's not kind of what we think. So, yeah, statistics people then took it, and yeah, dummy variable 0-1 sort of thing. What's the right name for it? And let me put it in here. There's a civilized name for it. Right? It's an indicator variable. It indicates whether you're male or not. See what I mean? This is Mietnen's terminology. I've been influenced a lot by him, but he thought hard about being minimalist and clear about terminology. An indicator variable is very clear. It indicates you're male or you're not. It indicates you're in this group or you're not. Right? It's probably the safest one. By the way, could you use indicator variables of 0 and 100 instead of 0 and 1?
If you treat it as a category, then yes, but usually 0 and 1. If you
0 and 1, but is there anything magic about 0 and 1?
It's on off,
yeah. Could you put 0 and 100?
You could, but it doesn't give you like the average that way.
Well, yeah, the thing is if you do 0 and 100, you're going to have to divide your beta by 100 or multiply beta by 100 to get it back. Because that's the effect. Because the beta is going to be for one unit difference. And yeah, so you might as well make it 0 and 1. But you could have any two values are okay, as long as they're off, as long as you know how different they are. The 0 and the 1, the 0 and 100. A 1 and a 2 is okay as well, but then you have to be careful of other things. See what I mean? Yeah. And as long as there's only two of them, it's no big difference, because it's the difference that's going to matter, and then you divide that by however many units. Yeah. Okay, that's indicator variable. But you see what I'm doing here? Something else I'm doing, I should do, but I was lazy, because they were there already. The four groups are G, E, N, D, and S. And of course, psychology people love that. But you really we should spell these out properly. G stands for what?
Gender.
They were reminded they were female. G. Oh, well, there's the problem. I don't know what you see. But we should put it out, reminded you are genetic, or it's genetic. You have an or the possibility now to make words longer. When I was learning statistics and computing, we had 8 letters was the maximum you could have for the name of a variable. 8 letters. So you had to be very inventive when you had a lot of things. Now you can put dots, you can put underscore. Another favorite I put is put start the first word, the second word started with a capital letter again. See? Age when you graduated. A-G-E, capital G, graduate. See what I mean? Underscore is another one, dot is another one, but they're all available to you now. So I did do this one though, because to me these two, if it's 1 or 4, that's the genetic and the, what's the other one? Oh, so I have it. Have I got it wrong here?
Stereotype.
That's your reminder that you were a woman, right? And this, the genetics, they were told that there is a genetic difference?
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the two groups, 1 and 4, where I basically they were misled. So another thing, we could call this misled. See what I mean? Isn't that right? Is that the right way to say it? Misled? That's mislead.
Single S.
Okay. Misled means fake news, right? It's fake news, right? So that's to me, that was actually we had a big discussion about this yesterday when Payan came. He said, we have four groups now. What are we going to do with the four groups? And I told him, quite honestly, I hate a study with four groups. It drives me bananas. When I have to deal with the psychologists and the social science people, they often have this, and they have analysis of variance. And they'll do an overall F test to see if they're any different, and then they start playing games after the post hoc test, this, that, and the other thing. And it drives me nuts, because I never know whether they're cheating, trying to make up the post hoc test after we have to have Brown-Ferroni corrections for multiple testing. You've heard that expression?
Yeah.
Multiple testing, Brown-Ferroni?
Yeah.
No, this man.
No?
No, if you go to psychology, it's a big deal. To keep people honest, you can't look at 10 different things and do 10 different t-tests, because then the p-value is being altered, right? So they call it multiple testing. And then there's honest significant difference and not honest as to whether you... And the rule in psychology is you're supposed to test for overall differences first. Any overall difference, if that's significant, then you can look for where the differences are. So that's stupid. That's stupid. We knew what was going on here. You look at the way they wrote the article. And the way they wrote the article, they had the two groups in their head as misled, and the other two was whatever. So I like binary contrasts, a contrast between one and the other. I call it a 1 degree of freedom contrast. It's a contrast between two things, nothing else. When you start doing all the combinations of four, A with B, A with C, C with D, it just gets too complicated, and people can accuse you of fishing, right? So that's the issue. So I like to have it straight ahead of time. What are we going to do? Where's the primary contrast? And to me, the primary contrast was fake versus not, which meant, and he kind of was a bit uncomfortable with it, I wanted to merge the two together. And I call this now, there's two of these grouped together, one and four are grouped together, three and two are grouped together. You mightn't agree, but anyway.
Isn't E also say, like, based on experience, yeah, males do better as well?
No, but E and N, E said it's experience, and oh, that's just your teachers telling you that. You got told that, but it's not. But they're saying it isn't true. I think in that they said it isn't true. And No Difference said directly it isn't true.
Yeah.
So to me, these E and D are to me the ones that said, come on, there's no difference. Yeah, there's degrees of it. Yeah, one is your teacher telling you, and the other is a genetic study found no difference.
Right.
So I agree with you, one is stronger than the other. Mm-hmm. The genetic one is, the no difference is based on a study. That's more concrete, so maybe that's more direct. A teacher telling you is a little, but they did say, no, there isn't, but a teacher's tell you there is. Yeah. But anyway, I'll say, I it's just my own personal thing. There's one or two pediatricians I dealt with for many years that were doing this sort of thing, and they always had three or four groups, and they were always trying to cheat or anything like that, but this post hoc test drove us nuts. Because the journals are fussy about it, and you know there were rules for how you do it. And it just was anti-science to me to be doing it that way, because I knew the temptation.
I'm putting the two groups together, doubling the sample size.
Well, that as well. Yeah, that as well. That's a help. So even if there's a slightly different, then you're diluting a little bit of one, I like that better. Yeah. But the biggest thing is to me is contrast between two things, that's a 1 degree of freedom thing. We might as well get to it now, because the other issues have to do with the way we do the why. When you think about, we have four groups. So that means you can do an analysis of variance, which is what they usually teach in psychology and all that. Analysis of variance when you have four. T-test if you have two groups. Analysis of variance if you have three or more. What does an analysis of variance give you? It gives you an F test. And what's the null? The null is mu1 equals mu2 equals mu3 equals mu4. What's the alternative? At least one is different. Is that really the issue here? I don't think so, right? But that's the no. So they start with that. And how many degrees of freedom does that F test have when you look it up? It's number of groups minus one, it's three. If you have two groups, you can make one contrast. If you have three groups, you can make two independent contrasts. Independent contrast. You can make three or four or five if you want, but there's only two independent ones. Because if you have three groups and I tell you two of the differences, you can work out the third one. Right? If you have four groups and I tell you three of the differences, you can work out the rest. Right? Yeah. So, four groups, 3 degrees of freedom for the F test. So it's a global test. It's a global test. And it's different than a directed test. A directed test is a 1 degree of freedom thing. It says, is it positive or negative? And you know which way you're going. 3 degrees of freedom means, oh, it could be A and B are the same and C and D are the same, but they're different from each other. Or it could be one is this way and one is that way. There are all sorts of combinations. The statistic that you're going to have to look up and where the p-value is significant in that is actually quite conservative now, because it's actually going to penalize you now for looking in three directions at once. See? It's like in two dimensions, when I tune a radio, right? I can tune a radio to be picking up signals in any direction around 360 degrees, right? So I'm looking around, I'm doing a scan in 360 degrees to see where can I find a signal. That's much different than looking for a signal between east and west. A difference between east and west, that's very clear, that's just east and west. But if I start going around in a circle and saying, I'm going to now look for wherever I find the difference, I have to pay a price for false positives from doing that. And that's why the 3 degree of freedom thing is actually more tough. It's a tougher test because it knows you're checking all combinations of twos and threes and up and down and sideways, right? Which bothers me. So I'm saying if you have a directed test, use it as a 1 degree of freedom. But to put it in words, there's three independent contrasts you can make with four. And there is a rule that's taught in statistics of orthogonal contrast. Who has heard that word? Orthogonal means what in math? What does orthogonal mean in mathematics? Orthogonal. What else does it mean in normal words? Huh? Perpendicular, but in normal words, orthogonal in the meaning here. Independent contrasts. Yeah, exactly. So here, let's say we had, let's put 1 and 4 together, and 2 and 3 together here, right? Because that's the way we think of them, right? 1 and 4 are the groups together. So the first contrast that I'm suggesting, this is 1 and 4, I'm suggesting this one first, right? Take 1 and 4, contrast with 2 and 3. So that's my first contrast, right? Right? And I'm saying that's the main one. What other orthogonal ones can we now make? We can make other contrasts, but that's grouping 2 versus the other 2. What else can you do? This is 1 and 4, 2 and 3. If we do this, right? That can be a second contrast. And this could be another contrast, right? Are they all independent? So I'm saying I'm taking 1 and 2 together versus 3 and 4. All right, 1 and 4 versus 2 and 3. That's one. If I tell you that that's significant or not significant, does it give you any hint as to what's going on here in this contrast?
No.
No. So that's why it's orthogonal, right? So that's so you're using the three things and looking at them in three different ways that are not overlapping each other. You're not using the same information several times. Right? Because out of all four numbers, how many contrasts can I make? I can make a whole lot of them. 4 choose 2, I guess, right? at least four choose two, there's six. I can do A versus B, A versus C, A versus D, B versus C, B versus D, C versus D. That's at least six I can think of, right? But those are not all orthogonal, because if I gave you the answers to some of them, you could work back and reverse engineer. See what I mean? Yeah, so that's orthogonal means there's only three, and you can pick what three. You pick. There, but you can't do four, because then you're going back over the same thing. You're double counting. Right? And so this is a natural one. And in fact, when you look at their paper, this is sort of what they did. They said there was no difference between one and four. They say that. There was no difference between two and three. They said that. But between one and four together versus two and three together, they say that in words. And then they say all p-values less than something. But what they're really saying is we did three independent tests. That's what they're saying. If you look at the words in their thing. Right? But I'm saying, forget about, this is second order to me. First order to me is these two, is just the primary one. In fact, I don't want to get into the other stuff. I probably, if we had big data sets, we could probably figure out whether you're
experiential.
Yeah, is stronger or weaker than being told directly. There's a study that shows it. It isn't just the teacher, you know, whatever, but yeah. Yeah, so that's fine, but that's more detail and it needs a lot more data, so I'm big on this. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, that's orthogonal contrast. You don't hear it much anymore because we don't do analysis of variance anymore, but it used to be taught a lot when people were, if you did psych stats, it's probably still used. And it was also a way to keep people a bit honest. So some people, it was okay as long as you did orthogonal contrast. You didn't have to pay anything in for p-hacking. But if you did many and did every pair you could and did the reported the best one, you had to pay a price for that because you had to tell people I cheated and looked in every direction possible. Okay. Yeah, so now I won't do anything here. We'll see what these guys did. But I also want to hear what you did first before.
We did just answer this as you did in
the SAS. Okay, so what you did, so that was treating it as four separate groups, right? Yeah, leave it the way they had it, four separate groups. And so did you do it as a regression or an analysis of variance?
Regression.
So basically, if you're going to do a regression, and you guys have the same issue, right? Which of these, you now have four indicator variables here, right? So which one is going to be the reference group? That's another issue with this business. If you have four groups, which one you make the reference group will change everything, including p-values, right? So which one is the reference group here? Hmm? ND? ND, was that the one?
No difference.
Is that a logical one?
I think so too,
yeah. Because that's saying no difference, so they should have the highest score, and then what you're wanting to see, not hoping to see, but wanting to see is whether if you tell them lies, they will believe you. Right? So you're going down, so a negative number then would be bad, right? Yeah, that's good, yeah. So ND seems like a logical one, yeah. And that's why here, when I put misled, what's my reference group? What's my reference group here?
Not
misled, which is just ND plus the other one together. Yeah, exactly. So that's what you did. So then presumably you had an F test with 3 degrees of freedom,
right?
So the issue with that then is, what are you going to say in your summary? What's your tweet going to be? If you do an F test with 3 degrees of freedom, or in the but in the regression you can do it better. If you do it analysis of variance, you only get an F test. But if you do it by regression, you're going to get three betas. So then, are you going to report each of them separately?
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to report three betas against the reference. Yeah, all right. Okay, and so you'll say, we found this was different, this wasn't, this was, compared to the reference. Okay, fair enough, yeah. Are, and you guys did the same, I think? Well, you have, I want to come back to you guys in a minute. Are those three beta hats, if you like, or effects, are they independent? Are they orthogonal? You did B, well, let's say whatever the reference is. One versus the reference, two versus the reference, three versus the reference. Are those three independent?
Yes.
You're sure?
What about the math one score?
Huh?
What about the math?
Well, no, we'll leave that aside for the moment. That's an extra complication.
Okay.
That's an extra complication. Let's say they were perfectly balanced and so there was no issue and so on, and no precision issues. But basically now we're saying they do one group versus the reference, a second group versus the reference, a third group versus the reference. Right? Are those independent? If the reference group is having a bad day, and by luck goes high or low, compared to what normally you'd get in a reference group of that size. If the reference group is having a bad day, what about your three contrasts now? They're all pegged to the reference. They're all pegged to the reference. So they're correlated. They're actually correlated. If you actually look at the correlation matrix of the three beta hats now, they're correlated. They have to be, because they're against a common reference. All three contrasts share the same reference group. I'm not going to have that problem because I only have one contrast, reference versus the other. But it's a small issue. Not so small, right? That I would have, it would make more sense to have three independent contrasts. Because then you can take the three independent bits out of it, but don't kind of overlap it. That's one of the complaints against analysis of variance, are these four, three group comparisons, right? Yeah.
So you mean, one versus all others.
That then what's the second one? No, those won't be orthogonal either. No, orthogonal is hard to do.
Yeah.
So that's why mine of 1 and 4 versus 2 and 3 is 1. 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3. Those are three orthogonal, and they also fit better with the structure of the study. See what I mean? So another point, I don't know, was it in this example or in another example? I think it was another example. Somebody suggested, I'm going to do stepwise regression. I have three dummy variables, three indicator variables, right? And so can I do stepwise regression on them and find out which ones are still significant and drop the ones that are not significant? How does that sound to you? Do you like it?
No.
No. Why don't you like it?
Because, I mean, it might not be significant, but it might...
Yeah, you might be interested in the answer, and you kind of, it's lost if you don't, you, it won't show up in the final model or anything. So I think that's, yeah. So I think there, that's another reason not to do stepwise regression when we have focused things, right? Don't throw them away. Yeah.
But in your method, even if one of the variables was not having a good day, like you said, in the other one, it would still affect your contrast, wouldn't it?
Well, I guess all I'm trying to say is that that reference group is the common one that they're all against, so it's going to induce correlations. So you're not getting the maximum information out of the data set when you do three correlated contrasts, when you were in fact able to get three uncorrelated contrasts. There's three uncorrelated contrasts, which are yours to choose, but once you choose them, stick with them. Yeah. So the stepwise would also not respect the structure of the study. So there's a structure to the study, which is two groups, and then little variations within the groups. So that structure is better kept if we do orthogonal contrast. But anyway, there was something else I was going to say on that. So that's it then. So we will say we found this different or this one not different compared to that. Yeah, okay. Fair enough, yeah. We'll get to the business of the math one in a minute. That's a different issue. Yeah. So I think we've dealt with the way we could do contrast. Yeah? We could either do the big ones and then two small ones inside those if we want, or do the way you have it, but it's whatever. Okay. I don't think there's anything else on the contrast, is there? So now the issue is what to do with this math one, right? Who else did this? What did you guys do? I'm not worried about that yet. I'm more interested in what did you do about the contrast?
We look at the rhythm.
Huh?
We look at the rhythm. So we did. So we did the contrast by group using the three groups against the MD.
Okay, and like they did, yeah. You used the reference group then.
Then we did the pairwise comparison after the
answer. Oh, okay. So they did pairwise comparisons as well, yeah. Yeah. The pairwise comparison then is only two groups in it, right?
Yeah, but it was six comparisons. Because we did
it. Oh, six. Oh, so they did six comparisons. Oh, yeah. They should definitely get penalized, right? Yeah. You see, but I think honestly, I don't trust psychologists. I've worked with them. I've worked with one who was very good here in Montreal, and we fell out. We eventually didn't talk to each other for a while, because at the end of the project, she wanted me to look at something else, and she had a table. It was in the days when printouts were this size, and she had a correlation matrix, and she had her yellow highlighter, and she had the yellow highlighter for the correlations, and then she would make a story. She would make a story for the correlations. After she did it, and she wanted me to rerun the analysis, then redo it. And I said, no. And she got really furious. And he said, that's not honest. And so we stopped talking. Yeah, seriously. Because I was leaving on sabbatical anyway, so it was a good chance to break it up. But I couldn't stand the way this, and then she was going to make a story on that after. I said, don't you, I didn't know the expression at the time. Do you know the expression, the Texas sharpshooter? Who knows the expression, the Texas sharpshooter? A very common thing in science. Texas sharpshooter. You go out in Texas on a Sunday afternoon, what have the teenagers got to do for fun when they're not on their Facebook or whatever they're doing and not playing football or whatever? Right? They go around in their trucks having fun, go out in the country, and they have guns in the back of the car because they like guns in Texas. And they start shooting at barns, right? You know, who's good at shooting and so on. And then you come to this barn and you notice there's a target in the barn and all the shots are inside the target, right? Oh, that guy's pretty good. And then you find out what really happened. They shot at the barn first. And then went over and painted the target on afterwards. That's a Texas sharpshooter. You see what I mean? This is what my psychology friend was doing. She was the Texas sharpshooting. Get the highlighter first, then make a data set to fit that. Or make a theory to fit that. And I said, come on. We would call that in EPI exploratory data analysis. You say it was an incidental finding and somebody else better replicate it. That's why we're in trouble with replication, is people not being honest. To me, it's not about the p-value. The p-value is not what's causing the problem with replication. The problem is people are just not honest about what they're doing and try to squeeze every last p-value out of everything to get the next grant. I'm getting cynical in my old age, right? But I think that's the big problem. People are just not, and sometimes they don't realize that this is unfair. She was a well-respected person, but this was the culture and her thing. She didn't realize that she was p-value hacking, basically. No, seriously, she was. Today, I think, we still can't do it because in a journal, nobody's going to tell you. Well, is there any way to stop it? Yeah, you register the protocol first and say, this is what I'm going to do. And this is where I'm going to spend my degrees of freedom, and you do it. Right? And then you can get away with it. Then, and we know what you were thinking beforehand. But you can't reverse it now and switch it the other way and start making an explanation for that. Just looking at the time, we should stop for a few minutes to have a break. I'm going up to see if there's any hot water.